Welcome to the seventh episode of Winning Ugly. Today, we have a first of sorts. Here comes quite a big introduction. Not only is he going to be the first recurring guest of the podcast, he's the first guest host of the podcast. We have Sox Scott from Sox Twitter. Hello, Scott. Thank you for joining us in Evan's absence.
What's up, Jake? I'm happy to be here again. I told you I was going to be the first ever recurring guest, and here I am, like 3 weeks later. So it's good to be here.
It didn't take long. Literally, the last episode was with you, and now all of a sudden you're host. I don't know if there's a secret agenda you got hidden under you or something like that.
Yeah, there might be. I think I was the one that made Evan go to his National Guard stuff just so I could host again. So here I am.
Well, I'm very happy to have you. I've been looking forward to these next 2 weeks, not because Evan is gone, but just to be a cool, fun thing to do, just guest hosting with you. So I really do appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's talk about this team that frustrates us and at the same time makes us happy. So let's do it.
Yeah, so I mean, like we were talking about before we started recording, this episode would have been pretty detrimental and pretty depressing if the Sox that just occurred, but they ended up actually winning the series against the Rays. Nice little weekend series. Final of that game just ended about 5 minutes ago, 6-5, White Sox. I mean, we could just go ahead and start off by talking about that game. Now, you know, it's fresh in our minds. I'll go ahead and let you talk about it first. But for me, one sentence that kind of just describes the game perfectly is just a real surprise in terms of effort, offense. Got a little scary towards the end, but a real surprise.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you texted me before the game. I was at the driving range and you texted me, you go, I have a good feeling about today's game. And I was like, well, that makes one of us, because I for sure don't. With this team, you just never really know. But, you know, 16 hits, 6 runs, those 6 runs coming in the first 2 innings, kind of sucked that we didn't really score any past the first 2 innings, just because, I mean, 16 hits, you would imagine that we have more than just 6 runs. We had a couple times where he had, you know, bases loaded, 2 outs. I think that was in the second with Pollock and he struck out. But altogether, it was a good performance. Gio didn't look like his typical self. He didn't really look too good. I know I texted you where I said I felt like Tony kind of left him out there to dry, just because he really didn't have his A-plus stuff. And he was kind of laboring through that fifth inning. And then in the sixth inning, when they started getting those guys on base, I wasn't a huge fan of not actually taking him out. I would have went to Lopez there, but it ended up working out. Graveman looked great. Bummer looked great. And then, of course, Liam came in and just closed the door. He's looked great the last few times he's been out. So I thought it was a good win, 4-2 in the season series against the Rays. I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think, you know, even though it goes completely against – Tony's philosophy of baseball, which is just, you know, the biggest boomer philosophy ever, that, you know, your starting pitcher, yep, ideally has to throw 100 pitches and go 7 innings. You know, I would have took him out, pitched 65 or whatever he was at the end of the fifth inning. I mean, yeah. I know that it's deeper than that. I know that it's also, you know, his confidence. I know that it's also, right, him in the clubhouse, all that stuff, and that's good and everything. But if you're trying to just win ball games, which, I mean, the Sox desperately need to rack up wins, I feel like this is stuff you got to look at. And even at the substitution that Tony made, subbing out Vaughn for Angle,
yeah, when he could have kept Vaughn in the game. Yeah, that was questionable. But then again, our good buddy on Twitter, GD, I don't know what his ad is anymore. It might be Yerman Chevrolet. I don't remember what it is now. He said, but what happens if McGuire gets hurt? Then you don't have a catcher, and then you're throwing in, like, I think our third backup catcher would be Danny Mendick. Like, it would have just been a mess. So I understand not taking out Yaz in that situation and taking out Vaughn, just because we needed the fielding. But I agree with you. I mean, I don't mind sticking with your guys and trusting your ace, but Gio just didn't have his best stuff today. And that's kind of why I was just like, I don't know if I want him in here right now. And, like, you know, 6-3 with Mike Zunino up to deck on bat, and you just knew that ball was leaving. Like, you knew going into that. Like, I said to myself, I was like, this is going to be a 6-5 ball game, because he was 0-2. really didn't look good all day. He knew he was going to get one.
You know, speaking of seeing that ball leave, something I noticed that initially concerned me. I really hope it's nothing. I really hope it's just kind of, struggling lately. But Yaz's two at-bats, last at-bats, I don't know if you saw this, Scott, but he, both of the balls off the bat, he thought that he got a good hold of it because he did his Yaz bat drop. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, that was crazy. I sent it in my group chat and I was like, man, that's weird. I was like, why does Yaz think he hit that like 500 feet? Because like his bat drops are famous, right? Like they're infamous bat drops where like if he bat drops, you know it. Like him and Yoan are two guys that if they bat drop, you know that they got it. And he did that both and they were just like routine flyouts. And I don't know if it was because they were inside and the ball just died or what the case was, but he felt like he got both of them. He didn't get anywhere close, really.
Yeah, I right when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, I don't like that." I feel like him and Yoan just needed the IL stint. Just like, just stay off the field, do whatever you got to do to get right. But we could tell you both are not at all what you should be right now. You're not 100%. It's so weird what's going on with them.
For sure, and you know, it's really a pain in the ass because Yaz was hit. He struggled at the beginning of the year last year, but he really didn't because he was getting on base. He was working counts. He was having really good counts. I mean, at one point, I think his batting average was like 150 and he had a 400 on base percentage. Like that plays for me. I enjoy that. Some other people might not because he's being paid $18 million. But then he started kind of heating up and then got hurt in Minnesota, which, by the way, I was at that game. Sorry, Yaz. I kind of feel responsible, but you know, he started heating up and then he got hurt and that kind of derailed him. And I have to think that maybe that knee's still bothering him just a little bit. Just from basic understanding of the human body with my background, I just feel like there's a possibility that that's still bothering him because he did come back really quickly from it. And just from his position being a catcher and having to, you know, squat down, like if he was a second baseman, it might be a different situation. And with Yoan, it just seems like he's always hurt. You know, he's always nursing something, which sucks. And I don't think we've seen really a healthy Yoan since that 2019 season. So, you know, 2020, he had COVID. 2021, I still feel like he had some effects to that COVID. And then this year, that oblique, I think that's giving him more problems than we're actually seeing.
You know, I think you should start giving those takes on Twitter and rename your account to Dr. Scott and then, you know, or PT Scott, whatever you got to do. And then just start giving that expert advice.
I mean, there's a reason why I'm going into PT, right? I mean, I have to do something. But some of these doctors, and it's actually funny that you say that because some of these doctors on Twitter, when coming into Tim Anderson, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. It's like you can't tell anything based off of how a guy's walking off the field. Like you literally can't do that. So that was kind of funny. We kind of, I don't know if you want to transition there, but we kind of got lucky in that sense.
Oh yeah, definitely. I will say though, ending that is that even after, you know, this guest host stint you do, I think you should be the winning podcast affiliated injury report guy. Give your own analysis and also what you really think about it.
I might have to do that. We'll have to talk about it.
Anyways, that is a good transition though to go ahead and talk about some injuries, I guess, and impact of them. So we all know Tim Anderson with that. I believe it was a grade two.
Grade one. Grade two would have been very, very bad. So okay, it's just a strain. Usually it's a 10-day IL. The only problem with groin issues is that most of the time they kind of stay around for a long time. So hopefully these 10 days help them. But hopefully we get them back here soon.
Sure. Yeah. And obviously I can't think of one player to go down that would have the most, you know, ripple effect on the White Sox than Tim Anderson. So the immediate, you know, position holder, placeholder at shortstop, Danny Mendick. I gotta say, you know, against the Blue Jays, he made that critical base running error, which a lot of people say it's also Reese McGuire's, which that's not wrong. It was also his fault for not hustling.
Right.
But Danny Mendick also made a mistake on that play. When I saw that, obviously it gave me a very dreadful feeling seeing, you know, your placeholder to the guy who's supposed to hopefully give you decent production to stay, keep you afloat when your best player's hurt, make that play. But I got to say, the whole Rays series and honestly the rest of the Blue Jays series too, man, Danny Mendick has been impressing me.
Yeah.
Especially today.
I was going to actually do a bit where I was going to say, all right, I'm going to read you out these stats and you let me know who you think it is. Because Danny Mendick's stats line right now is unreal. In 44 at bats, he's hitting .318 with a .362 on base percentage, 455 slugging with an 817 OPS. 817 OPS right now, I think, would be third on the team if he qualified for at bats. Like,
Wow.
how crazy is that? And obviously, like, it's hard to replace a guy like Tim Anderson. He's the heart and soul of this team. He's probably, we talked about earlier this year through DMs that we said, guys like Yoan and Yaz are guys that are important players to the team, but Tim might be the most important player to this team just because of what he brings. He struggled this year early with like defense wise, but I mean, he's hitting .356 with .393 on base percentage, a .503 slugging, .896 OPS. Like, you can't ask for much more from a guy that, a couple of years ago in 2018 was not that good of a hitter, but a decent defender.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I will say too, that last at bat that he had, where he had that he hit that ball to left field. I thought that was gone off the bat. If he hit a home run there, it would have been a 3-run bomb to extend the lead to 9-5. Oh my God, I would have been changing the Widdly Ugly podcast, name to Winning Mendick. I would have named this episode the Danny Mendick Show. He's been that good, where it's one A plus marquee play where it's gonna be like, damn, this guy's damn near the MVP right now, currently in the season, just this week, for what you need him to do coming in to fill in for Tim Anderson. I mean, but and I gotta say too, I didn't really expect this. I don't know if you did, Scott. This kind of came out of nowhere for me. I kind of was low on Danny Mendick, kind of with him, coming up in between just for double headers. How did you feel about that?
Well, I was low on him, but then I think it was the White Sox broadcast that said he hit 300 in AAA. When he went down to AAA after getting option, he hit 300. So, like, it's not like he hit bad in AAA. And obviously, he's seeing the ball well right now. But I mean, he's just a cool story to talk about. Former 22nd round pick, now playing in the majors and kind of actually playing well. And like, I've always thought he was a good replacement player. I've never really, was huge on him, but I never was like, oh, it's Danny Mendick. Screw Danny Mendick. I've always thought he was a good position player, and he for sure deserves to be on this team once Tim gets back. I mean, he's better than Harrison. He's better than Lurie right now. Gavin Sheets, he's for sure better than. I'm looking at Gavin Sheets' stats. That is disgusting. But anyway, I mean, he's better than these guys, and I really believe that he deserves to be on this team after this little stint for Tim.
I will say it was refreshing to face a lefty starter and not see Gavin Sheets today. I feel like I was spared from just disappointment.
Well, I remember talking we when we first talked in DMs, me and you, we were talking, and I said, if we could, I would love to get rid of Gavin Sheets right now. And you were kind of hesitant on it. And I said, there's no way, Gav. I said, there is no way in hell Gavin Sheets slugs over 500 next year. And right now he's slugging .328 with a .601 OPS. Like, he's just, teams have found him out. Like, he can't really catch up to a fastball right now. So, I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like that.
Actually, I have the exact DM pulled up. You want me to read your quote?
I would like you to read my quote. Thank you.
So this is me. We're talking, obviously, as Scott just mentioned. You said it'd be ideal. You give Vaughn the first base job, and it clears Sheets for DH. Even though I think your words, I think he'll regress hard, and then get a right fielder when you are set. Jose said, this might be it, blah 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 blah. And then you went on to say, I said, are you not a big fan of Sheets or just being realistic? And he said, realistic, I mean, he raked in the minors, but like, he just can't hit lefties, and I just think he'll get it figured out. I have no stats to back that, just a personal opinion. So if I have never seen a hard, cold hard proof that I don't know ball, and Scott does, I can't see anything else that proves it more than that.
The funny thing was, I said the part about the stats. I don't have the stats to back it up because I was golfing at the time that I was DMing you. I was actually golfing. And I was like, well, I'll just keep responding. I don't have the stats, but like I just felt like eventually teams were going to figure him out. Like you kind of have those guys that they come up and they absolutely rake. Yermin, what's the guy? Steven Kwan from the Guardians. Even at this point, in my opinion, Chris Morel, who, you know, they all came up, they all raked, they were all playing super well, and then all of a sudden teams start figuring them out because, you know, they're minor leaguers for a reason. I like Morel, I think he's gonna be good, but like Yermin, everybody was eventually gonna figure out that he couldn't hit a fastball, right? And now like Gavin Sheets, like he's another one of those guys who he hit well in his minor, you know, in the minors in his whole career, but I just felt like he was eventually gonna get figured out, and not being able to hit a lefty is critical because I mean, at that point, like if it's a seventh inning and he's coming up to the plate, they're gonna bring in the lefty to face him. Like, and then we're gonna have to go to the bench and get, I don't know, like Lurie or Adam Engel off the bench. And I don't know. I just thought it would have been cool to dump him, but he's here with us now, so hopefully he can improve.
Yeah, I will say, I guess two things. With what you said, you mentioned Christopher Morel. I actually texted Evan, rest in peace, by the way, to Evan Georges for the next 2 weeks. But I texted Evan, and I was like, God damn it, Christopher Morel is so likable, and I hate
He's
it. I
fun.
wish I
He's
wish
so fun.
I wish he was easier to hate just because he's a Cubs
He's
player.
right. I'm, you know, I used to be that way with Cubs players. Like I absolutely hate them, but like I can't lie. I like a few of the Cubs players. Like I love Morel. I love PCA. And I was joking with our good buddy Abeds. You know, every time he tweets out a video of like whatever PCA does down in single A, you just have to reply plumbers to him because all those pitchers are gonna eventually be plumbers in their life. But obviously that's not the case because if you're good, you're still gonna rake no matter where you go. But yeah, it kind of sucks that some of them are Cubs players because it'd be nice if they were in our system, but you know, it's cool that they're likable, I guess.
I will say, that's me mostly joking, all that kind of stuff.
Right,
And if any Cubs
right.
fans listening, I actually do enjoy watching these Morel highlights. But I guess to wrap up the Sheets thing too, this is something that Evan actually firmly believes. I remember he brought up one episode, I think 2 episodes ago, is that and I think it's also even reinforced to see how Mendick has performed. Send down Gavin Sheets to the minors to Charlotte for 2 weeks and have him, drink whatever the hell Danny Mendick was drinking, have him come up, and then hopefully have his approach be more improved, maybe and be more confident at the plate, something like that. Because honestly, especially in the Toronto series, and even in game one against the Rays as well, Gavin Sheets did not have bad at bats necessarily. He was working counts, taking pitches, fouling off pitches, spoiling pitches. But then when he get his pitch, on 3-2, 2-2, he popped up in the infield. It was not turning out to hits. So I feel like maybe you just get a little confidence in the guy, have him, see some actual success in AAA. He can come up and actually be somewhat closer to what his productivity was last season.
And you know, the funny thing about that is that we've had players that's done that in the past. You mentioned Mendick, but another guy, Adam Engel, completely changed how he hit. And he even admitted that. I want to say it was on Redline Radio. White Sox Dave and Carl interviewed him, and he basically said that he went down to AAA and they figured out something that he was doing. So he worked on it down there. And now, like, Adam Engel's a confident hitter. He hits lefties better than he does righties, which is good. But I mean, it seems like we have a lot of guys like that. Our pitching coach and hitting coach down there seem like they're pretty good. They pitching coach, I know for sure is good. I'm not too sure about the hitting coach, but you know,
I
why
believe
not
I could
give
be
up?
wrong here. I think Chris Johnson, former
It
Braves
is.
third baseman's hitting coach.
It is. It is. I am looking it up right now. I don't know much about him, but he has helped players in the past, so why not let him go down there? Like Berger went down there, and I think Berger hit pretty well there. I'm not honestly too sure. But like give him some opportunities where it's not like the most important games. Like right now the White Sox are what, 2 games back in the loss column from 500, is that right?
Yeah.
So, like, these are important games coming up in the next couple weeks. Like, you're gonna know if this team is gonna be able to turn around within the next few weeks, because you have a couple, we have a tough series with Toronto, three games, another three games with the Rays, and it doesn't get any easier because we get the Dodgers Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So it's a couple tough series in a row. So it would be nice if we could send them down, let them get some work, figure kind of stuff that's going on, because we all know that Frank Mediacchino, is very, very bad at his job and can't figure things out.
100%. I think that also moves us on to this next topic as well, which also I'm going to present it as kind of like a dual kind of thing, because we're talking about depth and how they're performing right now, like with Danny Mendick and also Jake Berger a bit, which I feel like Jake Berger, he should have his own little section later. But I can't help but think of Josh Harrison, right? So let's back it up to the graphic that you sent me. We've all seen, all Sox fans have seen on Twitter from Jay Cuda about comparing the 1983 White Sox and the 2022 White Sox. For anyone that hasn't seen it, I will go ahead and just kind of like describe it. Both White Sox teams managed by Tony La Russa. Both teams in their first 20 games, 8-12, first 25 games, 12-13, first 50 games, 23-27. Their final record in 1983 was 99-63. They finished first. And it shows obviously the parallels, potential parallels between them and the 2022 White Sox. And I kind of want to pair that with a depth guy like Josh Harrison. Now, like you said, Scott, like you brought up, like you said, you talked with your buddy. These guys got to start getting it in tune very, very quickly. Like we're talking next week, kind of quick, or even today, kind of quick. Josh Harrison had, I believe, two hits today. He had a double, also his first stolen base of the year. So he had himself a very productive game. Still sitting at 541 OPS, an on-base percentage of 265. That is not going to get it done. Maybe this is a turnaround game, but I kind of wanted to talk with you about what needs to happen for us to catch up to those 1983 White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, we have to get super hot. Our main guys have to start producing. It looks like Robert's starting to finally, come back to himself after that little COVID stint that he had. Jose's starting to hit better. Jose's slowly starting to raise everything, like in his stat line. He has 7 home runs on the year, 23 RBIs, a 255, 347, 426, and a 773 OPS. So that's good, but you need those guys to start hitting. You need Grandal to start working counts. You need him to start hitting as well. And then I think one of the most important players for production-wise is Yoan Moncada. You need him to be able to hit. We talked earlier how we think that they should probably go on an IL stint. I don't think it's going to happen, but they need to figure that out. And then, like last year, you just need guys to produce that you weren't expecting to produce. Last year you had the Brian Goodwins produce, Jake Lamb for little bit was producing, Gavin Sheets was producing. You weren't expecting that, so you just need surprises like that. Reese McGuire is starting to look a little bit better, and with how much he catches, we need him to look better. If Harrison can go back to what he has the last few years, he'll be a decent second baseman. And I wasn't mad about the signing when we did sign him. We just need those guys to start producing, because the pitching staff has actually been all right. Outside of a couple few shaky starts from like Cease, Giolito, and Kopech, like, but those are going to happen, So I feel like all together they've produced pretty well. We're getting Lynn back here soon. We're going to get Eloy back soon. So if you can just, start kind of producing a little bit more, kind of like how we did today, 6 runs in the first 2 innings, and then, being able to add on a couple extra runs in the later innings would have been nice. But if you can start doing that, I think this is still a very winnable division, which is sad to say.
I think getting guys like Josh Harrison and even Reese too, if he can pop up and be a contributor, that'd be huge. But I think getting those two, especially if Mendick can keep playing very solid too, that would be absolutely just huge for this team. Because, say Yoan Moncada doesn't ever really get it going season. Also say that maybe AJ Pollock doesn't really get it going this season. These are not so much AJ as it is Yoan, because I also think it's an integral part. If you really want to be a serious World Series contender, Yoan Moncada needs to get going. But even if they don't get going, those guys contributing, if, you know, Harrison, if Reese, if Danny Mendick, maybe even a Yolbert Sanchez that gets called up from the minors, who knows? If those guys can come out of nowhere, keep producing, I think it keeps this offense afloat enough to win the division. It's, you know, especially, and I also say this too, a lot of caveats have to happen, right? Like you mm-hmm. know, Abreu has to keep heating up. Tim Anderson has to come back, probably playing the same way he was playing. You know, Giolito's got to clean it up. I really don't want to see Giolito have a huge downslide or, you know, downfall where all of a sudden every start he has, he needs a ton of run support, which I don't really realistically see that happening, but I could see it maybe happening for the next couple starts until he gets his, you know, his feel back. But I completely agree with you. I think if you get these depth guys going and you have them just contributing consistently, I think you can still win the division. And then obviously the big if this team's going to contend for a World Series is Yoan Moncada. I think mm-hmm. also AJ Pollock, and hopefully Abreu can get back to his usual numbers. I think those three guys, 100%. Because I Lurie's dead to me at this point. He's dead. He's dead. Yeah. He's like if you buy, you know, like a you know, a huge pizza maker for a pizza place. Like, you're not going to get any of that money back. It's fucking sitting there just depreciating. He's right. Dead. You need the core guys to get going again. And I think this win, it's really good for the team. 100%. I think this win is on the right track to hopefully maybe catching up to those 1983 Sox.
The problem is, and I've talked with people, I was like, it seems like they always have this big win and you're like, man, this is where they turn the corner, right? And we really haven't. I mean, that walk-off win versus the Yankees, then going and sweeping the doubleheader against the Yankees, like, those are massive wins. You're gonna turn around, the White Sox are gonna be themselves again, and they just haven't. And I don't know what's going on, like, if they're, you know, down on themselves, if, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't physically understand how this team can go from, like, fifth in baseball and runs to now, like, almost dead last. So I don't know what's going on with them. I think this is a good series, like you said. Hopefully they turn the corner finally. That would be fantastic because this is hard to watch at the time.
You know, I'm looking ahead of this schedule too. Obviously, we have the Dodgers here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. After that, we got a 3-game series at home against the Rangers. Then we go to Detroit for a 3-game series. Close out then June with the Astros, Blue Jays, and Orioles, as well as the Angels at the end of the month. July yeah. is going to be a huge, huge month. I'll spell it out for you. H-U-G-E, huge month. I mean, you start off the month against the Giants, which, you know, if we can rock Carlos Rodon, I think I'll set off some fireworks or something. I'm really expecting to get absolutely carved by that guy. After that, Twins, Tigers, Guardians, Twins again, Guardians again, and then Rockies and Athletics. And after that, the Royals again. So, I mean, if you want a month to really make up ground in your division and really take it back and make up for a lot of fuck-ups, July is the month to do it. I think it's sink or swim, mm-hmm. Scott, honestly.
Yeah. I was listening to The Score the other day, and Lawrence Holmes was on, and he was talking. He's like, look at what the Twins have faced so far. So I'm just going to read off the teams that the Twins have faced so far this year. They played Seattle, they played the Dodgers, Red Sox, and then they went Kansas City, us, Detroit, Tampa Bay when they were in their losing streak, Baltimore, Oakland, Houston, Cleveland, Oakland, Kansas City, Detroit, Kansas City, Detroit, Toronto. So outside of Toronto, they really haven't played like a very, very good team. You know, they played Tampa when early in the season, at the end of April, and they really weren't themselves still. Houston, they ended up getting swept by. But they've played a lot of AL Central teams, and we really haven't. And the thing with us is that I think we're above 500 against teams outside of the AL Central, but we're like 6-10 against teams in the AL Central. That's not going to stay the same. Whereas the Twins are the exact opposite. They are like, I think one game, or when he was talking about it, it was a couple of days ago, one game under 500 against teams not in the AL Central, and they were like 10 games over against teams in the AL Central. I think this race is really going to come down to September. And what you were saying is like coming down to these series that we have to win and have to sweep. But like coming up for the Twins, their next three series is Yankees, Tampa, Seattle, Arizona. So like, Seattle, Arizona, not been great, but like Tampa and New York haven't been bad. They've been very, very good as of late. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do.
I look at these past games for the Sox, and I'm just like, okay, maybe on paper this team's a big momentum team, right? Like, they have bad
Right.
momentum going towards them, they just roll with that and get absolute shit. If they have good momentum, which is why I was at that game Tuesday, May 24th, the opener against the Red Sox, when I left the baseball game, earliest I've ever left a baseball game, in the bottom of the fourth inning. It was I believe it
Oh.
was 10 to nothing. It was it 9 to
Yeah.
nothing. That's when
I
she
think it was
started.
10. Yeah, I think it was
Yeah.
10.
So, my expectation after watching years and years of Sox baseball, especially with this core. I mean, how long have we been dealing with this core for? The last 4 or 5 years, since the sale trade. To me, I thought we've always been a momentous baseball team, but we come
Right.
in that opening game against the Red Sox, get shelled 16-3. Somehow grind out a win the next game, but then get shelled 16-7. I feel like that just killed any momentum that the Yankees Sunday win gave, or Sunday doubleheader sweep gave to us. And then we go into Toronto, and everyone we get swept in Toronto. And I kind of skipped over the Crosstown series too, which it pissed me off and everything. But I feel like it was just, I don't know, the Crosstown
We,
series. It's always a huge series, but it's just kind of
yeah,
like a fluke in the general picture of things.
right.
The
We still
Toronto
won the
series
season
definitely,
series. We
yeah.
still won the season series 3-1. So it's not like we lost a season series to the Cubs. We still beat them. We just gave up a game.
Totally, 100%. Yeah. So I think to bounce back from Toronto with winning a series in Tampa Bay, it's momentum in the right way. But like I said, I've been so wrong about this team, that saying they're a momentum-based team. I really have no idea
Right.
how, Tuesday's going to go with the Dodgers.
And it's crazy. Like, if you look at the Sox schedule, you talk about momentum, but like the teams that we've had to face at the times that we face them have been very, very like not good. Like, we playing early May against the Yankees, who I think were on a crazy win streak at that time, right? Or they were like, 9-1 in their last 10, something stupid
I mean,
like that.
yeah, just buzzsawing teams, yeah.
We played the Red Sox when they were going fucking haywire. We played the Blue Jays when they won what was it, 8 straight until they got beat by the Twins the other day. Like, we're just playing teams when they're at the highest of highs. And like, there's games that we've lost badly, but there's also other games where, lost to the Blue Jays on Tuesday 6-5. That's a winnable game if we don't, have that minor base running mistake. But then we bounced back and we went 2 out of 3 with Tampa. So like you said, hopefully the momentum finally shifts for us. That'd be awesome because the next few series are very winnable series that we need.
Yeah, I mean, so here's a question I just thought of, Scott. I think where I'm coming from when I ask this question too. Does Lynn and Eloy coming back necessarily help this White Sox team?
That's a tough question. Just because, if we get Eloy back and he's hitting homers, absolutely, 100%. If we get Lynn back and he's shoving like he did last year, absolutely. However, you just don't know. Lynn is 36, 37, somewhere in there, right? He's an
Not
older guy.
young,
He's
not young.
not young, right? Eloy's young, but he's been, inconsistent just because he's been hurt. If you can get them back at the best of their best, absolutely it helps because then you're playing less of, our good friend Gavin Sheets. You're playing less of him for Eloy. You're not pitching Davis Martin, you're pitching Lance Lynn. you have these, and as much as we love Quez Dog, who got hurt shagging balls in batting practice, which I'm just gonna, I think it would have been cooler if they said he got like he hurt his groin like having sex or something like that. Like how cool that would have been. But I was
Well,
just like, this
shagging,
is
Scott. He was
unreal.
shagging.
Yeah, he was shagging. But like, we've had to pitch those guys and having to pitch Cueto, who's been all right, up and down. If Lynn can help us, that'd be great. It can't be as bad as our good buddy Dallas Keuchel, right?
I certainly hope not. I don't even know why you'd speak that into existence.
Right.
Because then, that just kind of increases the chances. I really don't know what the anything could happen. I mean, honestly, like if you told me that you were a time traveler and you traveled from August 1st, 2022, and you told me that Eloy is batting, I don't know, 230, slugging 420, really playing like shit, and somehow Jake Berger is contending for an AL MVP, and the Sox are still 5 games back at the Twins. I probably honestly wouldn't really write you off that quick. I really don't know
Yeah.
what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah, and it's weird. I keep seeing people on Twitter, and Twitter is a place full of creatures that some of them just don't know ball. I think, I don't know if it was you or Evan that got into the argument with the guy that just said, "I'm just gonna say it, Luis Robert is not good at baseball." It's like, what? What are you talking about? So like there's creatures on Twitter that just aren't smart and don't understand baseball. And like there's creatures that are saying, let's just put Jake Berger at second base. Oh, that's great. Our already struggling defense, and let's have a guy that has really never played second base and really not agile to play second base. And I love Berger. I think he's gonna be good, but like just throwing him at second base doesn't fix everything. We have a first baseman playing left and right field for the majority of games. So, it's tough with Berger. I like him a lot, but he just doesn't have a position.
Yeah, I think if he can man DH, because everyone thinks on especially Twitter, there's a lot of people that think that in baseball, if you just move a guy to DH, they're gonna automatically just bat as well as they've been batting positionally. But a lot of people who may say, never played baseball or just never been around the game to know that DH is a completely different mental approach
Yes.
to baseball. They don't understand that it's very rare to have that same bat from a guy who's coming from the positional, usually a
Right.
positional player, go straight to DH.
Well, and that was the White Sox fans thing last year. It's like just DH Eloy. Don't ever let him touch a field again. But Eloy has openly come out and said, look, I don't like DHing because it's such a different mindset, like you're saying. Like you're just sitting around for, two, three innings usually, and you're just sitting there waiting for you to go out. Whereas if you're in the field, you're locked in the whole game. Whereas if you're DHing, you're just sitting in the dugout, probably bullshitting with the other players in the dugout, not really focusing on the game as hard as you would if you were fielding. So it's such a different aspect to the game.
100%. Yeah. And I think it goes the same thing with Berger to second base. I'd love if this is MLB the Show and I could just take, a
Right.
5% fielding, doc and put a guy at second base. But it's the equivalent of real life putting Andrew Vaughn at center field, which also that same
Yeah.
guy who said Luis Robert is bad at baseball also said some bullshit like Andrew Vaughn is a better fielder than Luis Robert, my column,
Is
which, like I said, there's creatures on Twitter, like you said.
but the question is he just reverse jinxing us and we just don't know? Like, is he saying this? Because every time he said this, like Robert, he heated up right after he said that. All because Robert missed a fastball down the middle with the bases loaded and two outs when we were down by three. Like that, it was his only reason why he said Robert was bad. Since then, I think he has like four multi-hit games, something crazy like that. Like, I mean, I feel like he might just be reverse jinxing us, and we're just like, oh, I understand why now.
I've never seen a more swift. I mean, I have seen, but just in the last couple of weeks, I've never seen a more swift and just volatile response or volatile response to one tweet. That I mean,
Yep.
that thing got like 36 quote tweets and like 11 likes in a day. I've
Yes.
never seen that before.
Like, but that's the sad thing is like if he's not saying that unironically, he just doesn't know baseball like at all. You're saying one of the most talented generational talents that we've seen in the last 10 years is not good at baseball. Like that's like saying Juan Soto is bad at baseball because he's in a slump, right?
Well,
Like,
yeah, I mean,
they're
yeah, what
comparable.
like
They are
what pissed me
comparable.
off, what pissed me off about that whole thing, and I hate that we actually even like had to give more attention to it, but it's fine. He's a part of Twitter. He is the
Yeah.
stuff's public to everyone. This thing that pissed me off about that whole thing, I told Evan this too, because he's more Twitter oriented than I am. Like, I'm still kind of getting used to it, all that kind of thing, is
Evan's a
that
Twitter warrior on the weekends.
yeah, he's a veteran, absolute, you know, Jose Abreu. He's going in and putting up 30 home runs and 100 RBIs every season. You know, I think, you know, you make that take. I don't give a shit if you have a hot take. That's fine. Like, if hot takes are fun, whatever. But if you like, if you take your hot take and all of a sudden just use it to tell people who provide evidence that you're wrong, that they don't know ball, then just like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, what
Yeah.
is this that we're doing? Like, you know, he would just like literally look at evidence people provide to him and just be like, oh, I can tell you don't know ball. Like, this is the face of a guy who doesn't know ball. It's like, what? Like, that is the worst type of like debate style I've ever heard. It's just like completely
Honestly.
ignoring a person's point and just saying like you don't know shit.
Honestly, though, that's kind of me. I don't like looking at other sides of things. I'm not wrong. I understand ball. You're the one that's wrong. Like in this situation, he was just wrong. I don't know how he backed it up. What was he? I didn't even read it because I was so frustrated by just the tweet. I don't even know what he said. I just remember you guys were going in on him and I was laughing.
Well, you know what's funny too is that parts of the argument weren't necessarily incorrect too. His basic point was that Luis Robert, because he's only played 152 over the last 3 seasons and it's been a small sample size, you can't call him elite. Which, to a certain extent, you're like, I mean, tongue in cheek, yeah, you're right, I guess. But like, it's also a thing where you gotta look at the intangibles of a guy, and you can't
Right.
just look at that small. Like, okay, this is a perfect, actually, little point about it. Just as you can't call a guy elite by a small sample size, you also can't call him a bust.
Bad.
You also
Yeah.
can't call him, you know, a fucking like, bum. Like,
Right.
come on.
Like that's like people right now saying Yoan Moncada is bum cotta. I don't know. Whoever started bum cotta, I need to find them and like murder them. He has had 74 plate appearances. How can you base a guy how good he is this year off of 74 plate appearances? If this is July and he's at, 150, almost 200 plate appearances, and he's still slashing what he is, I'm gonna say, yeah, he's been bad. Like
Yeah.
right now, you can probably say Grandal hasn't been good. He has 160 plate appearances. That is understandable. But saying like guys with small sample size are bad just because they have a small sample size, like there is so much more you can look at than just his major league stats. Go look at what he did in the minors, because Robert raked in every level in the minors, so
Yeah, I tore it up. I
it's
mean,
just
he
annoying.
demolished it.
It's
Yeah,
annoying because
and with like Johan too, is that you got to think about a perspective is like Johan's still on like April 30th. He's still on May
yes,
1st in terms of at bats. Like, he is not on June 5th right now. And he's not even healthy too.
right. Yeah, he's clearly not healthy, and like you said, like he's played in 20 games. Like he's still honestly probably April 30. Sorry, he's played in 19 games. April 30 is probably pushing it because he's probably more like April
Yeah.
20th. Like
Yeah.
in most seasons, like so I can't write the guy off. And these I feel like these Cuban guys, especially like Abreu, is a good example. Is like he heats up in the hotter months of the season because he's used to the warm weather. He's been around for a while, so but he's never hit well in April. Maybe Yoan's the same way. He's from Cuba. It makes sense.
You know where Yoan is right now? He's at Kez Dog's big come out start right now against the Angels. That was on April 30th. He is
Oh
there
yeah,
in terms
he's
of the
there.
season. Imagine,
Okay.
like Scott, like think about how much shit has changed since April 30th. This
I
team looks
mean,
completely different, and the outlook is completely different from April 30th.
I mean that was right after the 8-game losing streak. So like, this is a much different ball club, and it's going to be a much different ball club probably by next week when we talk again. Like this, we could easily like go on a streak. Like they're good enough to go on a streak of winning like 8 straight, right? We both know that that's the case because we've seen it before. We saw it last year. We saw it the year before. So like it's possible that they do that again, but like you said, you can't really base a player based off a small sample size. However, if they are doing good, I will definitely use that for my advantage because I am a very much, I'm going to take advantage of those small sample size stats. I like
You know, I
propaganda.
yeah, I love propaganda too. It really gets the soul, you know.
For sure.
You know, I hate this adage, but it just pisses me off because it's so true, is that you really cannot tell what a baseball team is going to be on June 5th. And
No.
I really hate it because when it's used in the wrong context, in my opinion, to kind of deflect blame and kind of relinquish accountability for people performing like shit. But in terms of not fucking freaking out and all that kind of stuff, a team is not judged on June 5th. I'm not saying that Yaz is guaranteed gonna still have an OPS at 850 in August. I am not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is that I don't know what the hell his stats are gonna be in August. I have no idea. They could be worse. They could be worse.
It could be something so simple to fix that they just hadn't found yet, and
Yeah.
whether that happens or not, I don't know, but like we can still hold people accountable for sucking, right? Like just the
Yes.
same as we're holding like Tony and Frank Menachino accountable and Joe McEwing, like all those guys accountable for not being good at their jobs. You also have to give them credit from time to time. Like you have to give credit to Tony yesterday for pinch hitting Berger for that go ahead home run. But at the same time,
100%.
you can be critical of these guys even though it's early. And I agree with Tony. He has said, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. But at the same time, you can't be punting away games just because you're like, oh, it's a 162 game. Let's throw in, I don't know, Tanner Banks in a 2-run game or, something like that. Like you can't just be punting away games just because it's a 162. But at the same time, you have to understand that it's a long season.
I gotta tag Steve Stone when we publish this episode to not sc scold people for freaking out and actually being concerned about a team, because we are kind of mirroring what Steve Stone always says to like to be optimistic and know that it's a marathon, but he takes it to an extent where he's like, stop, you're being stupid for worrying. It's like, no, it's so much more nuanced than that, you know?
I agree. I love Steve Stone. He's a great, he's great for the game of baseball. He really knows baseball. And that makes me feel good that he is saying this because he is honestly, I think, in my opinion, one of the smartest guys in all of broadcasting, if you ask me. We have a really good crew in Benetti and Stoney, and like it's good, but at the same time, we can be frustrated about a, supposed to be championship level team only having what? Like, where are we? 2 games back under 500 and probably 6 games back in the division. We can be disappointed about that entering June. Like we do not have to be positive at this time of the year, but then again we also have to think that this is a long season. Anything can happen because I mean if you look at like with Billy Beane when Moneyball, I don't know what season that was, 2002 when they went on that crazy run. Like that stuff happens, but you also can be disappointed at the same time.
Or even the year the Nationals won the World Series. I remember that. Remember that season?
And like and I've talked with my friend Jake. He's at White Sox 2021, my
Good
former
name. Good
roommate.
name.
Good name. Former roommate, I golf with him a lot and we've talked about it where it really doesn't take much to win October, right? You just have to get hot at the right time. 2015 Mets are a great example. Braves last year, great example. Nationals, great example. Like you just have to be hot at the right time. And it doesn't really matter what your record is. Like the Dodgers have been the one seed the last couple of years, right? How many World Series have they been to? They've won one World Series and they haven't won every single one, even though they've had the best record, So October's all about getting hot and being hot at the right time. So if we can get hot and get hot at the right time, you never know. This could still be a championship team.
Scott, what do you usually shoot in golf? Where are you sitting around?
Usually I'm like for 9 I'm usually like 6 to 8 over. Yesterday was actually my career best. I shot 2 over.
Holy
I played
shit, you're a scratch golfer then.
I wouldn't go that far. No, I'm probably my handicap's probably closer to like the 10 to 12 area. So for 18 I'm shooting 10 or 12 over somewhere in there.
Oh, wow. I mean, I'm much more of a volatile golfer. I'm the kind of guy where I have the talent to shoot 88 anytime, you know, any given day, right, or 80, you know, 5, whatever. But, you know, you don't know if you're going to get 93 or, you know, 85 from me.
That's honestly really how I am. I can shoot 80 to 89 on any day. I could shoot a 90. Like a couple weeks ago, I shot a 50. Like it's how the game goes. But anyway, that's besides the point.
Like Tim Anderson 4 years ago, every game coming in, you could strike out 4 times. He could also go 3 for 5 with, you know, 5 RBIs. You never know.
Of course, well, you never know.
Well, yeah. Well, Scott, make sure you're not golfing 7:10 at Tuesday, June 7th. Steve Stone's making his return.
Oh, well, I won't be able to watch Steve Stone's return because I'm actually going to the game on Tuesday.
There we go. Well, maybe you could do the Steve Bartman. You can listen to it.
No, I'm not going to do that. Now that I said that on here, I'm going to have like people walking around trying to find me. That's scary.
Don't worry. When I publish this episode, I'll be like, by the way, Scott will be at the game Tuesday.
Yeah. Make sure you tell them I'm going to be in the 500s.
Hey, you said it, not me.
I'm not going to be in the 500s. But yeah.
Well, anyways, I think we basically covered everything we want to talk about.
We really waffled there for a little bit, just talking about random things. Like how golf got brought up too is quite impressive. So
we actually, you know, we did get in our waffling zone. I think, you know, a lot of professional wafflers would be very, very impressed. I think some scouts can be looking out on our next episode, see the development in our waffling skills.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is kind of what we, you know, I've talked to you about it, how we want to build this brand. It's like, we want to just have this like conversation. I told you earlier today how you said, oh, I'm excited for you to be on again. And I was just like, I'm just happy to talk ball. I'm willing to talk ball with almost anybody that's willing to, you know, talk with me. And I don't care how many people are going to listen. So, it's fun to just kind of waffle. And now we're almost an hour in and I feel bad. If people actually got this far, you're a real one. I respect you.
Yeah, well, on that note, too, I will make a announcement, which I don't even know why I didn't even say this at the beginning, but I'll just go ahead and say it now, and I'll just put it in, like, a tweet, so, you know, separate, so everyone knows. But we will be going weekly. Winnie, I will be going weekly after this episode. So next week, we'll have Scott still. The week after that, Scott can go ahead and kick rocks. Evan will be back.
Wow. And wow. Yeah. Honestly, I just thought I was going to take Evan's spot after these next 2 weeks. Like, you know, we're going to put up historic numbers, put up some numbies, and I was going to take his spot, but I guess not. All right.
Let's just say next Sunday is a legacy game for you, Scott.
It really will be.
All right, anyways. Go ahead.
I'm glad you guys are finally going week by week. I think we really need a good White Sox podcast, and you know, you and Evan do a fantastic job with everything. So make sure you subscribe, make sure you listen, and yeah.
Well, I mean, you're just as part of this podcast success now as Evan and I are. So I can't wait to grow it even more too, and you'll be on plenty of more times, and I'm excited for next week to talk with you too. I don't know, maybe there'll be an emergency. I guess maybe Jake Berger will hit 4 home runs. We'll have to get on and talk about
if there's an emergency podcast, I will be the first one on. With that being said, hopefully this time next week we're like, I don't know, like 5 games over 500. That would be quick math, 8 in a row. Let's go 8 in a row by the time we talk next Sunday. That'd be cool.
In memory of Evan, let's skull fuck these next couple series, huh? How about it?
Yeah, let's skull fuck them. Let's get 2 series wins, eh?
Anyways, so I could talk with Scott all day, but hope you enjoyed the episode. If you got this far, you are probably a really, really good person, and everyone probably likes you. You probably have a shit ton of friends because you're just a man or woman or whatever you identify as. So we got the Dodgers starting Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then we're going to have the Rangers. So small little homestand until we record probably after the Rangers game, 1:10 on Sunday. So make sure to look out for that episode. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Winning Ugly Pod. And watch us get in Twitter fights with creatures on Twitter. just kidding. There's actually still more analysis. But anyways, that's it for me, Jake, and for Scott, our guest host. Thank you for listening, and we'll go ahead and see you next week. Go Sox.
Go Sox. Go Sox.